Welcome back to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. Now starting his second term, Republican Utah Congressman Jason Chaffetz now finds himself in power. The GOP has the majority, and he's been appointed chair of the National Security, Homeland Defense, and Foreign Operations Subcommittee. The House opened Thursday by reading the Constitution on the House floor. I started our conversation by asking Representative Chaffetz how Congress will prove its commitment to the Constitution beyond this symbolic gesture.
Well, some of this may seem like small steps, but they're giant steps for the United States Congress. And many of us were elected and reelected based on the idea that much of what goes on here at Congress has no constitutional authority. And so to read the Constitution, I think, is symbolic, but it was bipartisan. It was done together. But I think it's important. And even as we introduce pieces of legislation, there's going to have to be a citation in the Constitution as to where the representative thinks there's authority to do it. There's a lot of us believe we're doing too much, overstepping our bounds, and that the United States Congress shouldn't just use the Commerce Clause or the General Welfare Clause to justify everything we do around here.
Well, setting aside the health care bill for a moment, because that's a very large debate itself, what else do you think Congress has done in recent years that has shown a lack of respect for the Constitution?
Well, I think we've totally ignored the 10th Amendment, that the enumerated powers that are clearly articulated in the Constitution are oftentimes bypassed, and we forget about the 10th Amendment, which says that those things that aren't specifically laid out should be left to the states. And so, yeah, health care is probably the biggest prime example that a lot of us use regarding that. But try to find me an area where the federal government isn't involved. And they're pretty much involved in everything. And that's the general concern. And education for me, I think it's imperative that we obviously come together as a community and provide the strongest education for our children as possible. But we ought to be doing that in the state of Utah. I don't need some federal bureaucrats, the thousands of people here in Washington, D.C., to tell Utahns how to educate our kids. And so stuff like that becomes more than just words. It becomes very imperative and a key indicator of how things move forward here.
Well, taking a step back, if this is all true, how did we get to this point, given that, you know, everybody in Congress was elected to be there? These are the people that we sent to Washington, D.C., you know, with a mandate from the voters. So how did we get to this point then?
Well, I think there's a lot of us that felt like the Constitution had been forgotten, ignored, that that we, too, in Congress have a constitutional duty, role, and responsibility to uphold the Constitution. It's not simply a function of the judiciary, the judicial branch. It's also something that, as a member of Congress, we too are also supposed to uphold. And to the extent that now Speaker Boehner has put that at the forefront of our minds, I think that's an important message to people, and certainly that's come across, I think, fairly well in a very bipartisan way.
And Congressman Chaffetz, what constitutional issues might you deal with in your new role as chairman of a subcommittee dealing with national security?
Well, we're going to be looking at national security not only in terms of homeland security, but also the Department of Defense, foreign operations. Those are things that are obviously close to my heart. There are certain things that our federal government should and shouldn't be doing. National defense is obviously a huge one of those. Border security and immigration policy is one of those things that is clearly a federal issue. But then as you start to dive into, say, the TSA, and, you know, I've obviously been out there a lot on the whole TSA issue, and how do we find the proper balance between securing our airplanes and aircraft, and how do we balance the need to protect our own civil liberties and our personal privacy? So those are very interesting lines. They affect millions and millions of Americans and Utahns, and something I'll dive deep into.
Do you expect to revisit any controversies of the Bush administration, for example, FISA and warrantless wiretapping?
Oh, there are a host of things that toggle between the Bush and the Obama administrations, from immigration to Afghanistan and Iraq policy. Mm-hmm. Certainly the TARP. You know, we're very critical of the TARP. Well, TARP started under Bush, so I'm not going to shed or push something aside simply because it was George Bush, or I'm not going to accelerate something just because it's Barack Obama. But, you know, Barack Obama happens to be the current president, so he's going to have to be held accountable and answer the hard questions. It goes to the core of my duty and responsibility, which is I'm not there to be the lapdog for the president. I'm supposed to be the check and the balance on the president, and I take that very seriously.
Mm-hmm. And, Congressman, I'll ask you about your pension bill in just a moment here. But first, I do want to ask, leadership has made it clear that introducing a bill to repeal the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act is a major priority. What is the overall goal here, given that you know that the Senate is controlled by the Democrats and obviously Barack Obama is still in the White House?
Well, I think we're elected, and many people are elected here to Congress with a mandate to limit the size and scope of government, to cut the spending, and part of that was to repeal Obamacare. We put forward a pledge to America. We intend to fulfill all of those items on there, and repealing Obamacare was one of those things that we intended to do. Now, this first vote, which will come next week, I think will be successful in repealing Obamacare. What happens in the Senate or with the president, well, you know, we can theorize on what might happen there. But this will certainly then come up again as we go through the appropriations process, where you're going to have, for the first time since I've been here, and I've only been here 24 months, have an open rule where members are allowed to amend the appropriations bill as they go through the process.
Mm-hmm.
Most people would think, oh, well, isn't that happen anyway? It hasn't since I've gotten here. Under Nancy Pelosi, we never had an open rule. We never had the opportunity to amend an appropriations bill. In fact, in this last year, they didn't even bother bringing them up. So it'll come up again, and I think the funding issues will certainly be at the forefront of a lot of members' minds.
Is there a political motivation in this, in that, you know, if a Democrat votes against repealing the health care reform bill, you can say, Jim Matheson or somebody else voted against repealing Obamacare, that means he's bad?
Well, probably all things we do here are politics, but it's bigger and broader than that. I mean, it is a deep-seated policy issue. I, for one, don't think that the federal government ought to be trying to dictate which doctor you go to and how much you spend at that doctor. Those are issues that our government does have a limited role in, but should happen at the state level, not at the federal level. So if in, you know, whatever scenario, a representative or a member of the Senate should be held accountable for how they vote and be able to justify that to the voters.
Congressman, here in Utah, we have undergone a very significant reform of the state's pension fund. Now you're introducing a bill in Congress to try and ensure that the federal government isn't bailing out other states' pension funds. Tell me what the overarching goal of this is, and what's the problem you're trying to prevent here?
Well, it's House Resolution 23. I introduced it today.
Mm-hmm.
We ought to be proud in Utah of what we've done, because Utah has taken the tough and difficult step in working with its employees, the state employees, and looking at the pension funds and putting ourselves on a trajectory that is responsible to meet the needs and obligations that we've made long term. Unfortunately, most states have not done that. There are a number of studies and looks at this that find that there are roughly $3 trillion with a T, dollars worth of unfunded liabilities. And what this resolution simply says is it's the sense of the House that these states should not be coming and running to the federal government to try to get a bailout, that the good people of Utah shouldn't have to use their federal taxpayer dollars to be able to bail out, say, Illinois or Kansas, two of the worst states that are out there right now. And so it's almost as if we're firing a shot across the bow of these states, if this resolution were to pass, to say, states, you're going to be held accountable and responsible for this. Don't think that big government here in Washington, D.C. is just going to bail you out. Make the changes necessary, make the sacrifices necessary now to deal with this problem.
Two more quick questions for you, Congressman Chaffetz. First, the Republicans in the House have moved to reduce the power of the delegates from Washington, D.C. Now, under the Constitution, the District of Columbia does not have a full representative with full voting rights. What good does reducing this person's power accomplish?
Well, what it does is it recognizes that the voting power is reserved to the representatives of the many states. That's what it says in the Constitution, and that's what we should be adhering to. So you're representing, you know, in Washington, D.C., they're not one of the several states. They're just not.
Yeah, but some people would probably say, well, if the delegate from D.C. were a Republican, you probably would want to allow them to continue voting.
No. I don't think that's right. We've had Republican representatives from other territories and whatnot, and that hasn't changed or swayed our mind. We've had a quote-unquote Republican representation from Puerto Rico, and that we haven't changed our mind just because of that particular delegate. So I don't think that holds water.
And finally, Congressman, the new Speaker, John Boehner, made it clear during his opening address that he was reaching out to the minority party, and you mentioned your complaints about the lack of an open amendment process under the Democrats. If this, you know, bipartisanship does not turn out to be the case, if the minority party is put in the same position as before, will you raise your voice and complain about it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the true test of somebody who stands on principle. If it's right for one party, it ought to be right for the other party. And I said very publicly, I do not want to do to the Democrats what they did to us. And the Speaker has made a commitment that on the appropriations bill, they're going to come under an open rule. That will give both minorities, the minority party and the majority party, an opportunity to offer amendments. It's supposed to be contentious. It's supposed to be a spark of debate, and I hope that's what happens. And people shouldn't look at it because we disagree or we're debating that that's a bad thing. That's a good thing. But if the process isn't open to allow the minority party to voice opposition, then we failed. And I will stand up and vocalize that.
Utah Congressman Jason Chaffetz, we appreciate your time as always. Thank you.
No, thank you.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. We'll be right back.